Good morning. Great pleasure to be here, and many thanks to the organizers for giving me this opportunity to speak. Also, apologies to some of you who may have seen almost exactly the same talk about 2 months ago at ICM meeting, so please feel free to expose your electronic devices to that camera. Okay, let me get started. So this is my title. I'm Sasha Chernyshev from UC Irvine. And I guess I had some sleepless nights trying to connect this subject to the kind of main themes of this workshop, like spin orbit and topological and some other things. And I guess I did find some connections. So here's the first one. It's going to be a talk on Kitai free model. Same thing. Slightly Leo Tolstovian title, if you wish. So there will be some death towards the end. I guess the difference from the previous version of the talk I mentioned is that all the papers have now been submitted, and this one will be out in print in a matter of a week, and this one was submitted last week. So it's two of them are with Mike Zhdemirsky at Grenoble. Okay, so the plan is simple. I'm going to spend first two halves of this talk on the interesting phenomenon of kind of cute and unusual ground state selection in some extended version of Kagome-Lattice model, and the third half will be on some features in the spectrum which I predict should exist even in large as Kagome antiferromagnets. Yes, a couple of slides on the history of this subject, and I guess this picture explains that the tradition of crystal growing in Japan has deep roots, and this is an unknown crystal grower of classical Kagome lattice. This is a known person who gave us the name of Kagome. Itiro Seoji in 1951 wrote this paper on the Ising version of the model, which was sort of in the wake of the paper on the triangle lattice by Vanier. And this was the time when people started really being bothered by the fact that if you take triangle and you start putting pluses and minuses in the corner, you have a hard choice. When you put two plus and minus, you have to make up your mind when you do what to do with the third one. Okay, so moving to the vectors, vector spins. This is kind of the first slide when I want to emphasize that sometimes it's very useful to rewrite Hamiltonian in a particular fashion. Then everything becomes easy and transparent. You have a positive J, and for the triangle lattice, you can rewrite it this way. This term is just a constant, and S triangle is a sum of the spins on the triangle, and you sum over all up and down triangles, and you realize that if you want to minimize this energy, at least quasi-classically, you immediately feel that you have to have three spins to be coplanar, and you better have them in 120-degree structure. And once you've done it for one triangle, it essentially fixes the rest of the plane up to the, total rotation and stuff. So, and it's of course a spin equal to infinity picture, but then you have some expectation that should be ordered all the way, so some way to smaller spins, and despite some well-known and very influential insinuations in the 70s, in the beginning of the 90s, I think it became more or less clear that even spin 1/2 is ordered the same way. It was definitely settled in the mid, somewhat later than mid 2000. Okay, so this was triangle lattice. Now back to the Kagome. So you take the same structure, you take a 120-degree structure from the previous slide, for some reason recolor spins, and pluck out each force site to create a Kagome lattice, and you get this. You get this structure. And after a little bit of thinking, so the Hamiltonian can be written the same way, again, constant and sum of the squares of the spin on triangles. Just looking at this picture, you have a coplanar state, but each hexagon is using only two colors. And immediately, it's clear for the nearest neighbor model, you can just switch between these two colors, and it costs you no energy. And you could do it for each hexagon, which tells you that you have a macroscopically degenerate manifold of coplanar 120-degree structures. Okay, this is just a reminder how it all has started. So spin equal to infinity limit is therefore disordered for that reason that you have just massive degeneracy. Okay, there was some heroic effort by Andrei Chubukov more than 20 years ago, who used I guess he called as self-consistent spin wave theory, which I challenge anyone in the room actually to reproduce what he has obtained using the information in his paper. And it's not easy. But what he has shown, though, that what's happening is that quantum fluctuations, so finite value of spins, so it allows you for some quantum fluctuations, you choose this structure, which is named as root 3 by root 3 structure. However, even until less than, I think, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, it wasn't known how, you know, extensive this island was. The other contender for the ground state is sort of a ferromagnetic type of ordering. You pick your unit cell, and you have sublattices, and you just order. You have 120-degree structure within the unit cell, but then you make it ferromagnetic sort of through the system. It's called Q equal to zero structure. Okay, so here's where we come in, is the extension of this model to the sort of XXZ type for delta less than 1. So 1 is the Heisenberg limit, and then 0 is, you can call it XY limit. And this consideration allows us to do things under more control and get some useful insight, as I will argue in a second. But let me just state one thing, that actually this type of perturbation is very gentle, this type of anisotropy, in the following sense, that it actually does not lift any degeneracy of these coplanar states. The difference between the Heisenberg limit and the any point along this axis is that coplanar states are, you can think of the Heisenberg limit that your coplanar states are chosen by some future inclusion of thermal fluctuations. But in the plane in the XXZ case is just chosen by the easy plane of the model. Okay, so, but as I will argue that within sort of 1 over S expansion, you have much more control over this range of delta. So why is that? So together with this manifold of degenerate state, you actually also have the feature which is common to many frustrated models, but you have appearances of so-called flat modes. And in the case of this root 3 by root 3 structure, you can concentrate again on the hexagon and ask what would happen if this 6-spin fluctuates 3 up, 3 down in a kind of alternate fashion. And if you take a harmonic part of your Hamiltonian, it shows you no restoring force. There is nothing which tries to pull back the spins in the harmonic order. So there are nonlinear terms which will take care of that eventually, but which means that on the linear spin wave result for any structure, in fact, not only this, but any other structure you can obtain for within the 120-degree manifold, the fluctuations can get a little bit more complicated there, but the essence of it is the same. So you have doubly degenerate spin waves which are dispersing, and so you have a flat mode, and it's also a flat mode at zero energy. And this is, of course, an issue, because this is the Heisenberg limit only. So the issue is that normally when you use some sort of 1 over S expansion, you actually expand in 1 over omega, 1 over omega k, in a way. And that could be a problem here. This problem is resolved in a way, but it's got quite a bit easier if you introduce anisotropy, because getting out of plane now costs you some energy. Okay, and this energy is proportional to this root of 1 minus delta. So the point is, though, that this mode is still flat. It's perfectly flat in the harmonic level. And But you now can get back to your 1RS expansion and maybe look at things a little closer than you would be if you were not Andrei Chebukov. Okay, so one other feature of this consideration is actually once you start looking, okay, in this, so what we are looking for here is some order by disorder effect. And normally, the harmonic Hamiltonian would already, in 99% of the cases, it's a harmonic part of Hamiltonian which allows you to select between your degenerate manifolds, select a state which becomes a ground state. It doesn't happen here because, as I mentioned, the same spectrum, you have the same spectrum for any member of that 120-degree manifold, okay, which was actually known to these people back again 23 years ago. So it was known to the same group of people that it's nonlinear terms which will take care of that ground state selection. And this is the second point at which I want to highlight that it's useful to rewrite Hamiltonian one more time. And you rewrite it the following way. So you flip the z-axis, so you have a laboratory frame, and z is normally out of plane. So you flip the z-axis in the plane and align it on each side together with the ordered moment. I don't care which 120-degree structure you choose. Then x is perpendicular to it, and all y-axes are pointing outside of the plane the same way. Okay? So this is what you get in these new variables in the local reference frame. And I haven't even specified that I'm dealing with 120-degree structure, so this is valid for any coplanar structure of spins. Now, if you focus your attention on this group of terms here, there is one term which can be referred to as a cubic term, and there are two ways of thinking of it as cubic. So if you think of as z as kind of density fluctuation of spin, it's kind of clearly quadratic in the deviations, while sx is linear in the deviation, so it is an unharmonic term, cubic unharmonic term. And if you think directly in the Holstein-Primakov quantization of spins within this local axis, you also see that it produces your cubic terms. It gives you linear terms, but those vanish when you minimize energy, so they don't count. Okay, so what about the rest of these guys? And now it's essential that I have a 120-degree structure, a 120-degree structure in my system, because all cosines for 120-degree structures are the same. Sines are not. Okay, so it's clearly that it's only the cubic term which will be able to distinguish between different 120-degree configurations. Well, this group of three terms, this term produces your classical, it contributes to the harmonic term. These two guys also contribute to the harmonic, and all three contribute to the H4, the kind of Hartree term in quartic terms, S-square, linear, and S independent of spin. So this term will contribute to in the second order and give you correction to the energy, which will lift finally the which will decide who is which state is going to be the ground state. Okay. So technical slide based on the paper of the same year by Brooks Harris, Catherine Cullen, and John Berlinski. And two authors could have been in this room. And so we picked up what they have started for the linear spin wave theory, and it all can be fit in less than three pages of a supplemental. Some generalizations, and there is a bigger, longer generalization list in the recently submitted paper. The highlight of it is the following. So you have a non-Bravais lattice. You have three sites. You have three species of bosons. Therefore, you need to diagonalize 6x6 matrix. Normally, it's a numerical task, and it's kind of annoying. They have realized that for number, actually, they have realized it for just nearest neighbor Heisenberg. We generalized it to some number of anisotropic cases. What you can do, you can actually perform a unitary transformation first, which makes this 6x6 matrix block diagonal, and then you deal with the usual Bogoliubov 2x2 diagonalization for each of the bosonic species. So you go from your your Holstein Primakov to some other basis first, and then you go to the Bogoliubov quasi-particles later. So what we do next, which is this cubic vertices. So if you've never seen anything like that, just don't be frightened. This is very simple. So you have cubic vertices which are proportional to U and V, U and V in certain combinations, which are Bogoliubov parameters, and there are these Fs here. And inside those Fs, there is explicit difference between, say, Q equal to 0 and root 3 by root 3 structure. So the difference is encoded there. And from there, one just needs to plug it in the energy correction again and perform 27 integrations numerically, because there are three species. And this is the result. So the result is in the inset, actually. So this is delta E for Q equal to 0 and delta E for root 3 by root 3 structure. And the main part of the plot is the difference between these two corrections to the energies. Okay, so the main conclusion of this plot is that you have a transition from one type of the ordered state from Q equal to 0 to root 3 by root 3. It confirms that, in a way, it confirms that, yes, there is a finite region of delta. Again, this is the Heisenberg limit. This is XY limit, where you have so in the proximity of Heisenberg limit, you have root 3 by root 3 structure. But surprisingly, as you lower delta, you get solidly in the Q equal to 0 region. And the amusing thing about this result is actually if you do it by thermal fluctuations, you actually don't see that. And so if I go back a couple of slides to that Hamiltonian I want to highlight. If you think in terms of thermal fluctuations, and you begin with the coplanar states, which are, in this language, only operate within with Sx and Szs, within this basis, but there is no coupling between explicit coupling of Sx or Sz with Sy, you will never see the value of delta. And that's what numerical results on classical model, including thermal fluctuations in both limits, Xy limit and Heisenberg limit, have shown, that you basically thermal fluctuations tend to select root 3 by root 3 all the way for all values of delta. Okay, so it's a different, it's a rare case when quantum fluctuations favor different ground state than the thermal ones. There is an interesting aspect of it which I want to spend some time on, is that actually it appears that you have there is some energy scale which is generated here, and it's very small. It's a fraction of a thousandth of J per spin. Okay, so I'm kind of roughly averaging it in this region. Okay, so it's always a question, where do you generate a small parameter from? And actually, it's a common thing in Kagome. There are some other recent works on the dynamics, and they also see the different time scales which differ from each other by two or three orders of magnitude. Okay, so here is another theoretical exercise which I guess was developed by some people in the audience, or some people who were in the audience last week. And it goes under the name of real space perturbation theory, which is what it is. So you try to do the following. So you have a degenerate manifold of states, and you can rewrite this Hamiltonian in a kind of a trivial H naught, and write perturbations out of it in terms of spin flips. And then what you do, you want to find the first term which would generate you a necessary coupling to leave the degeneracy. And you just try to analyze which order is going to give you what, and maybe you will see something in the structure of that analysis. Okay. So in the case of anisotropic Kagome lattice, so the XXZ Kagome model, you have a term which can be called double spin flip. There is a usual spin flip hopping, and there is a term which is reminiscent of that cubic term I discussed in the context of nonlinear spin wave theory. Okay, and your logic here is essentially kind of a tunneling logic or a super exchange logic, if you wish. So you have to create spin flips first, then this cubic term explicitly contains signs. So again, you realize that this term has to be used twice, at least twice in that expansion, minimal order is twice. But you have to create a spin flip before you use this one. So you use this one twice, that one twice. You have fourth order contribution, and that should be the end of it. The problem is the following. So what happens when you kind of look at this quantum fluctuation processes from the point of view of real space, what you do, you generate further neighboring interactions. In this case, it's either J2, say everything is what's generated is ferromagnetic. I'm not sure it is, but it's let's say it is. So then you will choose root 3 by root 3 structure if you generate J2. If you generate J3, you actually favor Q equal to zero state. But the problem is that symmetry of that, the obvious symmetry of this picture tells you that you generate both terms within the same order. So no degeneracy lifting is happening on the fourth order. And if you keep analyzing this way, you realize that anything which goes through this sort of involves this central site only and coming back, you are not going to leave the degeneracy. So you need a term which must have the path or tunneling path which requires a non-trivial topology, and it would be sixth order, but because of the structure of the perturbation theory, it's actually seventh order. Oh, here is my other connection. It's a topological term. Okay, so let me just briefly. Okay, so how does it help me with the small scale? So let me give you just give me one more moment. Okay, so there are similarities between nonlinear spin wave theory consideration and real space perturbation theory, which I want to highlight again. Both are kind of quadratic in this cubic term contributions. But here is this resolution of that of the small scale problem. So you use you count all the bonds. You generate J2, for instance, right? And you generate J2 between these two guys, and you generate J2. Three more ways, and you count energy per site, so it gives you a factor of 2. Time reversal gives you another factor of 2. Symmetry of the hexagon gives you another factor of 2. So you have 8J divided by Z to the power of 7. 7 is the seventh order of your perturbation theory. Z is a coordination number because all your real space techniques are effectively 1 over Z expansions because it's expansion in the path is where you want to go. Okay, and it gives you amazingly close number to what you see, for instance, in this difference. This is close to 5 to the 10 to the minus 4, and it's so good you don't want to do anything else. You don't want to do any actual calculations to prove that seventh order of the real perturbation theory will give you that. But I'll come to that in just a second. There are also some other nice similarities, although you cannot. There are too many terms. There are too many terms in this. In this perturbation theory, even the relevant ones, but you can show that all of them have the same sign for delta less than 1/2, and they all favor Q equal to zero structure. Okay, so this is all true for the seventh order, and there are some arguments for the eighth order that they have to be suppressed and blah blah blah. Okay, so there is also that some of them switch signs, so you would expect that there might be some transition here, but it only allowed to be at delta larger than 1/2, and this is what happens according to spin wave theory. Okay, so just one more detail. So it's in the spirit of some slides I've seen during the conference week. So you actually can calculate. You can go back to this perturbation theory construction and see that this term actually vanishes when delta is equal to 1/2. So you only involve two terms, and then the number of terms for delta equal to 1/2 is countable, and it includes only 144 terms, which can be all counted and split in a group of 10. And those are not my handwriting. This is not my handwriting. I would kill for such handwriting. This is Mike's handwriting. So in the end, you get a number. This is 2 to the power 15, which is, you can see that it's 4 to the power 7, and there are some other additional numbers. So you get 1 10 to the minus 4 of J. It's close, not exactly what our estimate has given us, but it's close. it's close. And it was rather satisfactory to see that. It's clear that there are some high order terms which contribute to that, but nevertheless. Oops. Wrong button. Sorry. Okay, one second, I guess, on an additional justification of this, or helpfulness, in fact, of this real space thinking, because one can induce the XY or easy plane anisotropy differently. One can introduce single ion anisotropy term with D larger than zero. And then, from the point of view of actually spin wave theory, almost nothing changes. There are some tiny deviations in how the energies of spin waves are defined. Cubic terms are all hidden in here, so there's not much change. Yet you calculate the energy difference, you see that qualitatively it's close. You have a transition at about the same value of d if you rescale it properly. But the actual effect is even smaller than in the XXZ case. From the real space point of view, though, this term is significantly different from the delta term, or 1 minus delta term, because it's much more local. And in fact, if you look at the structure of perturbation theory, you immediately see that it's z to the power 8 which you need to think about, the 8th order term. And this is roughly in accord with what we see in this result. So these two approaches really help each other here in terms of deeper insight into what's going on. Okay, so let me try to wrap it up with a bigger picture, if you wish. So one can do a simple calculation. You take average value of the moment on S site, and you ask where does it vanish according to, you know, Sz equals to S minus A dagger A in the linear spin wave approximation, which completely neglects possibility that spins can do some collective things and tunnel between different states of the manifold. So no, just forget about it. Just take a Niels track and calculate the boundary. So that gives you the red line, which asymptotically approaches the vertical line. So at Heisenberg limits, linear spin wave theory gives you disordered state along this axis. If you look closer to this graph, you can see that for spin 1/2, it predicts you that you're actually going to hit the order pretty soon at rather small anisotropy. And you overlay it with our next order perturbative Q equal to 0.3, 0.3 transition. That would be what Frederica Becker calls Russian phase diagram. But there are insights into this problem coming from mostly numerical studies. There are recent results for spin 1/2, both from DMRG and from exact decolonization, which say that 1/2 is immune to any changes of delta. There is essentially 90% overlap of the ground state wave functions if you take it at the x, y, and Heisenberg limit. So they don't care. They don't care about delta for spin 1/2. So it's all disordered here. We also know from Andre's work that there should be some island of stability here, so there should be this non-perturbative order by disorder taking over part of this line. And this is a numerical work of 2011 of the group by Johannes Richter, which actually suggests that everything down to 3/2, the spin 3/2, should be ordered. Spin 1 is also known to be magnetically disordered. It's some trimerized system according to some works. But again, as you reduce delta, it should probably transit into maybe some moderate state. So you do a lot of this, and you cook up this diagram. Okay, so you bend this line the way you want, and it doesn't touch 1/2. You suggest that there should be transition here, and the only problem is how do you bend this line, left or right, and So what we have used, actually, we used Andrei Chubukov's results, which are valid for very large spins, because the perturbation theory there goes in fractional powers of spin. I believe it's spin to the power of 1/3. If I'm wrong, it's 2/3. Okay, so it's definitely at least S to the power 2/3. So you neglect a bunch of terms, but you say, okay, what would be that if I project Andrei's non-perturbative results to calculation of the ordered moment? If I go from small spins, which phase do I see first? And since he calculated how the flat mode is bent by quantum fluctuations, you know the slope, you immediately can conclude that it should be Q equal to zero state because it produces here the lower, the can think now. I think it's lower slope. So we suggested actually in this phase diagram that if you go along this 3 half line, you may never see root 3 by root 3 structure. It just goes directly into p equal to 0. Same for spin 1. If it gets ordered, then it should be in the q equal to 0 state. Okay. It was 3 months of this suggestion to exist, and then there was a numerical work by the same group, by Johannes Richter, using, so what they use is perhaps less known numerical technique, which is called coupled cluster expansion. And what it, in fact, I learned from this paper is that it is same thing. It is the same thing as real space perturbation theory, but done numerically to very high order. And the only fishy thing there is how you extrapolate in terms of cluster, they use different orders of expansion, and how do you extrapolate as a function of this order of expansion. What's amazing here is, what's plotted here is it's the same graph as I've shown you on a different scale, so it's difference of energies between two different, the q equal to 0 and root 3 by root 3 structure. And you see that the yellow line here is our result. So it's essentially for large spin, okay? So it's spin-independent result. Their results are spin-dependent, but the order of effect is the same. It's you know, again, this is a tiny energy scale of less than a thousandth of J, and they seem to have enough resolution to resolve that, okay? So their results, of course, differ as a function of spin, and now the phase diagram, according to them, looks like this. Actually, I want you to check the top line. Compare it with the actual numerical results. Mine was a guess, complete guess. It's essentially one and is on the top of the other. But you know, you get lucky once in a while. So we didn't get lucky with this one. So this phase diagram is a little bit less exciting because again, all spins except for spin 1/2. Forget about spin 1/2. So all spins are either ordered or on the brink of being ordered, and then as delta reduces, they first see the root 3 by root 3 structure, and then they go into q equal to 0 state. Okay. How much time do I have? I started.
Yeah, 20 minutes.
20 minutes, good. I need 10. Okay. There are questions, okay, so you can ask now, turn on temperature, what's going to happen, you can discuss that. So let me flip this page and think about something else. So this is actually where, I think to me, the whole motivation for this entire project started from here. Okay, so what happens if you have well-ordered state, but you have this nonlinear, cubic nonlinear terms? Okay, so this is one question, and we know the answer to that. But there is an additional ingredient in the Kagome case, and as I will argue, in many other frustrated systems, this feature occurs, and you've seen it in some other talks last week, for instance. So first is that where do these cubic terms come from? They come from the existence of the non-collinear structures, and as I argued before, you have the, you know, SZ local, SX local couple, and you have cubic terms. And the term which selects your ground state was considered in this previous 20 slides, and the one I want to concentrate now is the other one, which actually annihilates one boson and creates two. So it contributes to this diagram here, which may or may not, depending on whether you satisfy the kinematic conditions, lead to actual decays. Meaning that if imaginary part of this bubble is non-zero, then you can have real decays. I guess you realize that this is where death is coming in, right? Okay, so the difference from other cases. So if you want to know about non-collinear magnets, actually I highly recommend this short 25-page RMP article, which is actually colloquium, so it's written, so it should be understandable, and you will literally learn everything you ever wanted to know about decays in non-collinear systems. But the new aspect of it is that flat mode. So what happens if you have a flat mode in your spectrum? Something like this. And this is common because, again, what you do, you just need some weak additional anisotropy in your system, and it will move the flat mode from zero energy. Okay, let me offer you kind of a completely simple and not related to any experiment justification of what I'm going to show next. So this is, again, this is a cubic term which I need, and now I want to pay attention to the powers of spin it brings me. And you can see that it should bring me the root of S. Each vertex in that diagram is proportional to root of S. And what I'm doing is that I'm just considering first one loop approximation to my self energy, or second Born approximation, if you wish. So phi is now J independent and spin independent, and I pull out the spin explicitly. However, what's being calculated here is essentially this kinematic probability of one particle decaying into two other particles. And what these guys are, they are products of that decay. And normally when you have low energy modes, high energy mode, but you still have, what matters here is sort of its velocities of those particles. And velocities are also proportional to first power of spin, again, in the 1 over S logic. So this will cancel that. Gamma will be independent of the spin. So the ratio of gamma to the, if you look at the picture if you keep the apparent width of your bandwidth of your magnet modes constant and you crank up spin, what you're going to conclude is that your gamma for large spins will be a diminishing effect compared with the energy scale. This picture has corrections. There could be some logarithmic corrections due to some Van Hoff singularities, but this is the best you can get. Okay, so this seems to be completely bulletproof logic, and higher order will give you these logs potentially. But now, if you have a flat mode, both decay products are dispersionless. In fact, they are not even subject of this summation. You can just pull this delta function out of the gamma, and you clearly have some resonance-like effect at twice the energy of the flat mode. And clearly, gamma has a singularity which is unphysical, which one needs to do something about it, and the question is, how does nature take care of that? And the nature will take care of that in its usual way, so it will avoid it, and the avoidance will be due to warping. So not the true flat mode is never actually truly flat, because fluctuations will induce some curvature, and in fact it's those the same terms, the same cubic terms will warp the dispersion of this flat mode. But then instead of one level, you will have a band which is twice the width of this band, which will be having decays, resonant-like decays in it. And from this simple logic, you also conclude that actually 1 over S fluctuations generate you dispersion, which is not proportional to the spin. So if you try to pull this trick that pulling out spin out of this delta function, you're not going to be able to do that. And gamma will be proportional, it will scale together with the spin. Meaning that as your spin goes, again, it's a theoretical construction, just crank up spin, keep apparent bandwidth of magnet modes the same, and you're going to see is that you calculate gamma using Born approximation. What you're going to observe is that gamma is not going to diminish as a function of S if you take this ratio. Gamma versus epsilon k will be 1, of order 1. Okay? All right, and it actually entitles you to the statement that the width of course will narrow because again this is will be of order J, this bandwidth will be get narrow and narrow, but within that bandwidth you will have lots of decays. Okay, so now reality is that there is this material which is called iron gerasite, studied by Kit Matan and his advisor Yang Li. Back almost 10 years ago, back in the time when the TV was still black and white and there was, you know, no laser pointers. So you can see that they have rather sparse points in their data. But again, it's spin 5 halves. Who cares? It's a classical system. And that was the attitude of co-authors on this paper. And there was a separate paper by Ilderim and Brooks Harris on the same year, which essentially found the parameters which allow you to fit this dispersion curves. And the conclusion is that it's mostly out of plane Dzhoushinsky-Maria, which selects you q equal to zero state to begin with. You don't need to worry about ground state selection or anything like that. So you just and there is some warping of the flat mode, and they interpreted it as an effective J2. And please recall that's what quantum fluctuations do, and this is the right order of magnitude of what you actually generate when you include quantum fluctuations. Now, let me perform the following exercise. Let me take this bandwidth of the flat mode and multiply the whole energy by a factor of 2 and get this twice band of energy of the flat modes and ask, what do I see there in terms of neutron scattering data? And you see no points in this range. Okay, so I guess, I don't know, when confronted, they said that they thought that there was a phonon in this range or something. So there is no data. They observe nothing. So missing data. And my suggestion is that actually what happens there is that you have significant decays, and therefore you have to look a little bit closer and more carefully. And actually you will see a lot of structures I will show next. So this is kind of on-shell calculation of forget about everything except the gray area. So you have a dispersive mode, and the gray area here and the gray area up here and down there is the same thing. It's just a half width of the half maximum. So it's that gamma k of I've talked about, calculated on shell. And again, keep in mind it's a spin 5 half system. Okay, so you can go here, which is above the resonant decay region. And you can ask, okay, what do I have here? You have regular decays. You have decays which are not scaling with the power of additional power of spin. Okay, so gamma k is the usual proportionality of J, and it has coefficient which is in agreement with our previous works on, say, triangle lattice or some other systems where decays are magnetic decays are possible. However, if you move within that band of resonant decay, you have a factor of 5 to 7 larger gamma. And of course, I would like to argue that it's a factor of twice S or something, which leads to that enhancement. Okay, so again, this is kind of on-shell picture. What you actually expect there is a rather richer structure. You should expect the so-called termination points. So you basically have drastic termination of your spectral weight at certain points because the density of states of that decay products is significant. And you will also be able to see some structures using some of the pictures, some of the approach of what Steve has highlighted. There is this idea of constant energy cuts that you fix your energy and you look at the brilliant zone. And if everything is completely classical or quasi-classical, what you see sharp circles of cones of your spin waves coming out. And dashed line, if you can resolve it here, is a prediction of the theory, and it's where the such lines should be, and you see exactly that. Once you enter the range of this resonant decays, you start seeing lots of other structures. And again, this is not fully self-consistent calculation, but I tend to believe that those are kind of rather robust features which may be observed if higher resolution is allowed. So you have a redistribution of the spectral weight to different regions. In fact, this snapshot is taken above the top of the magnet band, where you should not see anything to begin with, but the decays will and this kind of dynamical spectral weight redistribution will push some weight there. This is roughly it. There is some interesting observation. For instance, if you I was always puzzled when I looked even on the Herbert Smith size pictures or some other non-Bravais signals. Sometimes you see like bright region in one brilliant zone and then kind of completely signal-less region in the other brilliant zone. And I was surprised by that. And I think even in the ordered structures, you're going to observe something like that. And again, this is something simple, but I never paid attention to that. And I realized maybe I want to share with you this simple knowledge. So if you recently have taken the condensed matter class or taught one, you may know the effect of Bragg extinction when you have a non-Bravais lattice and some amplitudes conspire and cancel each other and some of the peaks disappear. And this is similar thing, but in the inelastic neutron scattering. So what's shown here is that there are three modes. I have mode one, which is flat, mode two, which is Goldstone, mode three, which is gapped, another gapped by dispersive mode. And I have two components of the structure factor, in plane and out of plane. And you can see, for instance, that in the out of plane signal, this mask, which is multiplying my spectral function of my mode, will not show anything from the first mode, not show anything from the third mode in the first brilliant zone, but it will show only the second contribution of the second mode. So you can be selective in terms of which mode you're looking at, and that can be useful. All right, I guess I'm out of time, so let me kind of rephrasing some old statements. This unusual order by disorder selection was somewhat unexpected, and the fact that non-trivial topological tunneling path is responsible for its selection was also an interesting finding. And again, my pitch of the day, I guess, is that when you have flat modes and you obtain them in some kind of perturbative way, some normally 1 over s, first order 1 over s calculation, you obtain a flat mode in frustrated system, think about nonlinear effects. That's it.
If you were to look at the iron jarosite in terms of just this single parameter delta you had for anisotropy, what do you think delta is and where does it fit on that?
It's not delta, but that parameter dm, which controls that. So, right. So that is known. So this g is 0.6, and it right. The point is that it gives you, it's small.
You showed a phase diagram with an effective delta. So does this map into that somehow?
No, because the Dalzhansky-Marié theorem actually breaks this degeneracy of the ground state already on the classical level. It selects you the cuticle to zero state to begin with.
So what is the nature of the transition if you go from?
It's a first order transition because the ordering vector is in one case it's zero and the other one is some other corner of the brilliant zone.
I guess it's a little bit related question. Is there any possibility to get a state other than q equals zero or q equals square root 3?
Yeah. Okay. Whenever you have first order transition, you may think that there might be some other guys nearby who. But when the difference in energy gets even smaller than the scale I've shown. I guess if I rephrase your question that, okay, why did you look only at q equal to 0 and root 3 by root 3, for instance? Right? So why are not other states? And I guess there is a sophisticated answer to that. There is these two states, if you map them on the height model, they are singlets, and they're already distinct from the rest of the manifold. But I know the words, I don't know what they mean. And
they may not be relevant.
And, yeah, But in a way that the way I think about it is that you want if you want to you know you're generating further neighbor interactions, right? And you want to gain some energy within the unit cell, within the smallest groups of spins. And if you're proposing some other structure which has higher Q spiral or some other state, you're probably not going to win because, but again, it's not a proof. It's just the logic that you want to keep the periodicity element as small as possible, and those two are the smallest as far as I know. Semi-satisfactory? Not even close.
It's a very related question. So in principle, you would be it should be possible to derive these effective interactions, you call Parzen neighbor interaction.
Yeah, yeah.
And then ask the question, what are the ground states you choose?
Yes.
And is it the same?
It's the same as real space. In a way, it is what real space perturbation theory is.
Yeah, what I mean is that in real space perturbation theory, you are calculating the correction for the ground state.
Right.
For two different states,
okay.
Q equals zero square root.
No. For real space perturbation theory, you start from an arbitrary 120 degree structure. You just generate J2. You don't think of which. You start from S state within the manifold. You don't specify which one. That's the power of it.
But
you actually generate effective J2.
But you already constrained the system with the 120 degree. Structure.
Correct, but that's sort of given. I would say that for Heisenberg, you can think about it. But if you have anisotropy which selects you the coplanar state, you have no choice. But the group of candidates for the ground state is the 120 degree manifold.
Another question. So, if you have out of plane perturbation, why don't you can't you get something like a Cantor case?
Like non-coplanar?
Yeah, non-coplanar.
For the types of perturbation we have considered, you retain the coplanarity in the classical level. So you can. I'm not sure which out of plane anisotropy. I don't think if you drive delta larger than no, but that won't create your. It will. It may tilt the 120, but it's just going to turn the ordering plane kind of along the easy axis. So to create the non-coplanarity, you need a more complicated terms. Like in the iron jar side, there is some level of non-coplanarity because of the in-plane, staggered in-plane Dilashinsky-Maria. But it's a smaller effect. You can actually see it here. There is a small gap. Instead of the gapless mode, and this is due to the same effect.
So do you get similar effects to this resonant-like decays if you have a flat band, but you don't have cubic terms? Does the situation arise anywhere?
The situation will arise if you have collinear structures,
right.
Or you are in a ferromagnetic state or something, so you will only have quartic terms, and that will essentially push my 1 over S discussion one order down in S because it's the next order. You may have 3 magnon decays, but those are normally much weaker order. I mean, an interesting question is, for instance, this ferromagnetic Dilashinsky-Maria things, because you do have some. First of all, you may have some non-zero quantum. but normally it's just scales with another small parameter like Dzerzhinsky Maria. Or these cubic terms can appear even without the non-collinearity. There are some peculiar cases when you have Ising-like anisotropy and you have effective field kind of transverse. So you have this shifted oscillator type problem, and it also yields you cubic terms. So there are ways of getting them, but I guess if you don't have such terms, you don't want to have such terms. Periods, then it's incorrect. You can always apply a field and generate them.
Sure.
Any other question? Okay. If not, let's thank you.